Good evening, everybody. Wonderful to see many of you. I know that there's a bunch more that are coming. They're on their way back from the Torah Academy dinner, but I want to get started here because there's really a lot that I would like to cover. We had made up last time that we're going to meet this week and then again next week, even though it's a little bit out of order. And we're going to spend a little time this week and next discussing a little bit about Hanukkah. It's coming up in just over 2 weeks. God willing, we're going to celebrate the first night of Hanukkah. Is on a Wednesday. It corresponds to easy to keep track. It's the 25th of Kislev, also known as the 25th of December this year. Interesting, easy way to remember it, but only because it's Kislev. That's why you'll remember it, right? I'm sure. Okay. That being said, I want to talk a little bit about Hanukkah. We all know the way we light our menorah, the way we light our Chanukiah is we start the first night with one candle and we have our helper candle, the shamash. And then the second night, we have two candles and then three, and we go up each night. What many people are not aware is that this is not a unanimous opinion. Not everybody agrees that that is the way to light the candles. There's a machloket, there's a disagreement in the Mishnah between two famous bodies, two famous study halls, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, the school of Shammai and the school of Hillel. Classic. One says day, one says night. It doesn't make a difference what the topic is. They were almost always on opposite ends. Almost. So we follow the opinion of Beit Hillel. Beit Hillel says we start at one with the when we work our way up as each successive night comes along. Beit Shammai actually says the opposite. On the first night, we light eight candles, and then the subsequent nights, we decrease one. Second night, seven, six, five, four, three, until the eighth night of Hanukkah, you light just one. Okay? The Talmud wants to understand what's the rationale. It's not like they just sat around and they said, well, I think it should be like this. And the other one said, no, I think it should be like, you always have to find a source. What is the basis for why your opinion is the way it is? So the Talmud says two interesting ideas. Is anyone familiar with this? Vaguely, you've heard something a little bit about it. No, yes. Yeah, a little bit. Okay. So let's just jump through it quickly. The Talmud says like this. One explanation in the Talmud has it is that it depends which perspective you have. Do you look at the holiday of Hanukkah as it is one day that has arrived, 2 days that have come, three that have come, four that have come, meaning the first day, it's one that's passing, two that's passing, and you're counting what's known as the days that have already come. So, somewhat in past tense. This is the first day, the second day, and you're counting as you go along. That reflects the opinion of Hillel, Beit Hillel. Beit Shammai, on the other hand, looks at it and says, how many days are left? How many days are still to come? So on the first day, he's at eight, then he uses once, and then the second day, there's still seven, and then six, until finally on the eighth day, this is the last one. This is day, the last that remains. That's one opinion in the Talmud. Okay? I don't think it requires much further explanation. It's a different perspective. It's like going through life. Is it half full or is it half empty? Which way are you? Do you look at things always? What's still to come? Or are you bemoaning the fact that this is what already has passed, and now you're, oh my God, I can't believe half of it's gone already. Right? Depends how you look at it. However, the second option that's brought down in the Talmud as to what the basis of their argument requires a little bit further explanation. We're familiar, perhaps, that on the holiday of Sukkot, there are a boatload of sacrifices that were brought. In particular, there were a number of bulls that were brought, parim, okay? The parim that were brought. And the way it's done is that on the first day of Sukkot, we brought 13. On the next day, we decreased it and made it 12. Third day is 11, 10, 9, 8, 7. If you add up the total number, 13 plus 12 plus 11, 10, 9, 8, 7, you come to a grand total of anybody quickly? 70. Trust me. 70 bulls. The number 70 should be a familiar number to you. The number 70 in Judaism, what does it represent?
The Sanhedrin.
Okay, Sanhedrin is close. Can't be an even number, Sanhedrin, by definition. Otherwise, you have a hang jury. Always an odd number. But you're on the right track. 70 are a few things, but the most common occurrence of the number 70 represents the seven root nations of the world. 70 nations that represent the Umot HaOlam, the nations of the world, which dates back to the story in Bereshit, talking about the tower that they built, and God had them confuse their languages, and they split up into all over the world, and 70 root nations. It's a number that's used throughout. Okay. Says Beit Shammai that just like on the holiday of Sukkot, you have the total number of 70 bulls that are brought corresponding to the 70 nations of the world, but it's in decreasing numbers, representing the decreasing power or exerting their authority over us and over the world. We pray that it will continue to diminish day by day by day until the point that they will not be in charge, and rather God himself will be in charge. That's how one understands it. The way it's phrased is Keneged Shivim Umot Olam, corresponding to the 70 nations of the world, Upochet Veholech, and they continually decrease. Okay? That's the concept. As opposed to a totally different perspective of Beit Hillel, and that is we have a rule. You always want to increase holiness. For example, when I was a kid, so they tried to convince us that we needed to study Mishnah, and they actually had a competition, a motivational way of doing it. They used to teach us to memorize them. It was called Mishnayot Baal Peh, learning Mishnayot orally. If you can go ahead and be tested on one Mishnah, then you got a certain number of points. If you could memorize the whole chapter of Mishnah, you got something even greater. And it was always a challenge. If the first week you memorized one, they pushed you to say, okay, try to do two and try to do three. Always trying to increase so that you're improving in your spiritual pursuits. So you have two conflicting perspectives. You have the Beit Shammai perspective that looks to the prototype of diminishing the evil, so to say, in the world, taking and reducing the power of the other nations. And the prototype for that was the bulls that were brought over Sukkot. Similarly, says Beit Shammai, we're going to do the same thing with the candles of Hanukkah. We're going to start with eight, and we're going to lower one each night until you get to just the one. That's Beit Shammai's view of how to look at the world. Beit Hillel looks at it the other way. He says, we look at the perspective of we're always trying to increase our observance. We're always trying to increase our level of understanding, our increase our level of spirituality, bring more into the world. Neither one is completely right, neither one is completely wrong. They both have a valid perspective. But here's what's fascinating. You guys with me so far? Okay. Here's what's fascinating. The Vilna Gaon writes that even though in this world the rule is we follow Beit Hillel, that is 99% of the time we follow the opinion of Hillel. So that's why, in fact, we do follow his and we start with one and then go up to two and three and four, etc. However, the Vilna Gaon writes that in the world to come, we're going to follow the opinion of Shammai. Now, what exactly that means needs a little explanation. Are we still going to be lighting menorah in the world to come for Hanukkah? I was under the impression no. So let's try to understand maybe these two aspects. What is it about the perspective of Beit Shammai that says we're looking always to diminish and lower something, making it less and less, reducing it? Versus the Beit Hillel view of always trying to expand and increase. They're looking at it from, glass half full, half empty perspective. And what does it mean that in the future, that we're going to rule like Beit Shammai, why would that be true? In this world, we're going to say like Beit Hillel, but in the world to come, we're going to follow Beit Shammai. These are the two questions that I would like to address. And I found this beautiful insight from a great sage. Unfortunately, he died relatively young. His name was Rav Pinkus, Rav Shimshon Pinkus. He wrote the following, and I saw it, I loved it, and I wanted to share it. You know, there's a concept with everything in life, you have two ways to address a problem. There's always a two ways that you can go ahead and address any problem in life, whether it's a financial, right? That's an easy one. You can't afford something. You have two ways to address it. You can either figure out a way to lower it, find something at a cheaper price, lower the cost, or get more money and thereby afford at the higher level. Correct? You can address almost every problem in life by either raising yourself, taking it higher, or lowering and diminishing whatever it is that's holding you back. Either way, you'll be able to get it. Both are valid approaches. When I was in yeshiva, so we spent a large part of our day studying Talmud. But again, there's two methods in studying Talmud. In the mornings, which in theory, one's brain is still a little bit fresh and it's not, you got tired, as most of us, we get tired as the day goes on. So they used to teach us to be much more analytical. What I'll use in terminology, there's two ways. There's depth and breadth. Depth is a matter of delving deeper and deeper and deeper, but staying within a small confine, analyzing something deeper and deeper, as opposed to breadth, where you're broadening your horizons and covering more material, albeit on a more superficial level. It's not as deep. I don't want to suggest that it's superficial, that you don't get the idea and you're just reading words. That's not what I'm suggesting. But there's two ways. There's a way of staying on one piece of Talmud and spending 3, 4, 5 days analyzing the text and digging deeper and appreciating, insights about it. And then there's also the concept of there's more material to cover. Instead of just studying one section of the Talmud, I want you to cover 4 or 5 pages this week. You won't get the same depth, but you'll get the breadth. In the morning in yeshiva, almost every yeshiva in the world, they spend their time analyzing the depth, deeper and deeper and deeper. The afternoon time, again with Talmud, they're going to spend time covering ground, breadth. They're both valid. Again, I'm not picking one over the other. They both have a place. They both are important. Rabbi Pinkus wants to suggest, the Beis Shammai view of life, as we said, Beis Shammai starts large out here and slowly diminishing, getting deeper and deeper and deeper till, for lack of a better word, what is a laser? How does a laser work? Anybody? How does a laser beam, when they do laparoscopic surgery? Come on, doc. When you do a laser cut, what do? They harness the power of light, right? And they made it in such a concentrated form. It's a beam with such power. Am I correct? That you're
Yes,
able to penetrate. What?
they focus light.
Yeah. It's so powerfully focused. As opposed to your typical ever-ready flashlight, which is more interested in dissipating light, making sure you cover a larger area, it's not nearly as powerful. Good with LEDs, it's still power. But the concept, Beit Shammai looks at the world and says, you know what we need to do? For me to address problems, I got to be able to knock it down and to concentrate, focus, zero in on the crux of the issue. Psychologists will tell you we got to get the old Freudian way of looking at life. I got to dig deeper and deeper into your childhood. I got to find out about your toilet training habits because that's going to tell me all the insights about what makes you tick. That's a focused, laser-focused kind of approach. Start and then narrow it down, diminish it further, 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 further. Beit Hillel, on the other hand, he looks at it and says, okay, there's definitely merit to that, but there's other parts that you also need to start here and expand. You have to be able to increase your performance. Psychologists have changed their way of looking at things. Whereas in the old days, it was a Freudian approach of where they can't change any behaviors until they got to the root of the problem. That's a Shammai perspective. They dug deeper and deeper and deeper. But things have changed. In the world of psychology now, the first thing they say is change your behavior. We'll figure out what's tempting you to do it. What are the triggers? What are those things? But the first thing you got to do is behavior modification. Change, be better today than you were yesterday. We're going to work on it. We're going to figure it out. But you got to make a change and be better today than you were yesterday. Two very different approaches. This is the Shammai and Hillel disagreement. Shammai is all about starting out here and working narrower and narrower, deeper and deeper, laser focused. And Beis Hillel says, no, you start at a point and you expand, you grow, you increase the positivity within yourself, and those positive behaviors become your new habit. You think these are new concepts in psychology? This is old school, man. This is how we read the Talmud. This is how we learn a Mishnah. This is so fascinating. These two approaches about how to deal in life certainly have its place in how we deal with our spiritual sides as well. Beit Shammai says, listen, Beis Hillel says also, we have good and we have bad. We have behaviors that we know we need to get rid of. There's things, whether it's characteristics, behaviors, we know we need to change. We just spent Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. We know there's what to improve. What's the best way to do it? Beit Shammai is going to say, dig deep, focus, spend time analyzing what's happening within you. Is what's my trigger for anger? Why am I so stingy? Why do I feel this urge always to speak and see the negative in others? Dig deeper and deeper. That's a Beis Shammai view. Beit Hillel is going to say, yes, we're going to change our behaviors, but we're going to start today by finding something positive in somebody. If you continue to improve your behavior, I don't necessarily know if I'm going to get to the root of it, but I know that if I continue to practice and elevate myself of the perspective of people, how I speak to people, how I observe that, if you improve your mitzvot, you will by definition become better. They both, again, have validity, but they're coming at it from two very different perspectives. Now, you've heard me talk about this concept called Dafyomi. Dafyomi is this worldwide phenomenon, which was started, believe it or not, I mean, all of us, I'm sure, have attended conferences over the in our lifetime, and we roll our eyes, and there's benefit to going to conferences, but okay, it's yet another conference. My colleagues here at Shoresh, two of them flew out to Chicago this morning. There's a 4-day camping conference. Thank God I bowed out. I'll be working here. And I'm not complaining that I didn't go to Chicago in December. But, there's benefits and there's not. But I will tell you that approximately 150 years ago, there was a conference of Torah scholars. They got together and they were addressing world Jewry, issues within the Jewish communities around the world. What can we do about this? What can we do about that? And a man by the name of Rabbi Meir Shapiro got up, and he was one of the main speakers. He addresses the crowd, and at that convention, he floated this novel idea that there's one way to increase Torah study, and he said, a way of unifying the Jews all around the world, regardless of where they live. Imagine, he said, if a Jew is living in Israel and he goes to visit somewhere in Poland, he goes to visit somewhere in Canada, or he visits somewhere in South Africa or in South America, and he wants to continue his Talmud studies. Can you imagine how great it would be if when he left Israel, he was studying Tractate Brachot, page 14. And when he got to South Africa, guess what? You know what page they were studying? Tractate Brachot, page 14. And the Jews in Canada and the United States and Africa, and you name it, they're all on the same page. And everybody learns one page a day. And we're all on the same schedule. He said, do you know what kind of connection that means? Do you know what that means that you can go anywhere to any shul in any city around the world and you want to study that Talmud? Guess what? They're studying that Talmud too. He made this proposal at that convention about 150 years ago, and it took off slowly, slowly. And then, about, I'll say at this point, probably 30 years ago, it really, maybe more than that at this point, maybe 40 years ago, it really became a thing. And they started to celebrate it. I led a group from Columbus twice. We went to the Siyum HaShas. We went to the conclusion of the finishing of Daf Yomi, finishing the entire Talmud. Gentlemen, you can do it in 7.5 years, one page a day. It's doable. We led a delegation there, and it was inspiring beyond words. It can be done. Rav Pinkus writes that, you know, it's such an important idea, not just Daf Yomi, but he says now you have this disagreement between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. Is it better to focus and concentrate my learning? I'm just going to master one tractate. That's going to be it. But I'm going to be an expert in that tractate. The other ones, okay, I never got to them. That's a Beit Shammai view. Focus, right? Start out here and laser focus deeper and deeper and deeper. And you know it well, but that's all you know. Beit Hillel says, no, you got to finish the whole thing. Okay, the next time around, you dig a little deeper and understand it on a much better level. And each time you review it and it gets deeper and deeper, but you got to go and cover material. Depth, Beit Shammai, breadth, Beit Hillel. Rav Pinkus ended this section with something that shook me. And I still, to this day, it fills me with dread. He writes, remember I told you that the Vilna Gaon wrote that in this world we rule like Beis Hillel, but in the world to come, we're going to rule like Beit Shammai. Remember I told you that? And it really begs to, what does that mean? What Rav Pinkus explains is that in this world, we follow the opinion of Beit Hillel. Our mission is to study breadth. Make sure you cover as much material as you can. Obviously, not at the cost of not understanding it, but understand it on some level. Crack the binding. You have to have studied every tractate at least once, some level of understanding. That's what this world is for. We follow the opinion of Beit Hillel. Cover material, cover ground. Learn this parsha this week, right? We just finished yesterday Parshat Vayetze. Today we start learning Parshat Vayishlach. You say, but I didn't fully understand Vayetze. Okay, save it for next year. Now move on to Vayishlach. Read through Vayishlach. Get through what you can. Next week, you do Vayeshev. And you go, is it at a fast pace? Yeah, it's a fast pace. But you can't go through life. Don't end after 120 years saying, I never even saw Parshat Miketz and never even saw it. Don't say that. This world we rule like Beit Hillel. Cover ground, cover the material. Oh, the world to come. The world to come. The Vilna Gaon says, we paskin, we rule like Beit Shammai. We're going to be spending our time focusing on whatever it is we learned in this world. Then we spend time analyzing deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper eternally. We can keep going because it's infinite. However, says Rav Pinkus, if you never even opened, you never even cracked the binding on a certain book, you can't take it deeper. You didn't get to step one. If you never got to step one, it's impossible to get to steps two, three, and four. That's a scary thought, folks. If you never studied any of it, how could you possibly spend eternity going deeper? You haven't even seen the material yet. It shakes me every time I see this because I didn't do, and I don't yet do, Daf Yomi. I did set a goal when I turned 50 that I'm going to make a concerted effort to finish all the tractates at least once. So I'm in the process. I hope God will give me the strength, the wisdom, and the years to do it all. I don't have the ability to do Daf Yomi yet. My days are too crazy. But I recommend highly set this goal. This is the disagreement. Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel are both right. The question is, it's triage, Doc. I got to decide what I'm going to do now. I only can choose something now. I can't do it all. We say you follow the Beit Hillel general principle now. Cover material, cover ground. You got to do all that you can, and then we'll continue to delve deeper. This is when you light your Hanukkah candles and you go one, then two, then three, and you say, right, Rabbi T talked about this. The idea of increasing. I can't just focus on one thing. Oh, I'm only going to study the Chumash. I'm only going to. No, gentlemen, we got to grow. We got to take it to the next level each day. Find something more. This month, I'm going to focus on that mitzvah. Next month, I'm going to do another different mitzvah. And I'm going to. Will I do it perfectly? No. If you're going to wait to do a mitzvah perfectly before you move to the next one, you're never going to get it. Never ever. Nobody does it perfectly. So okay. So this month you decide I'm focused on this mitzvah. I'm gonna work super hard not to speak Lashon Hara. Will you be perfect this month? No. But next month, pick the next mitzvah. You're gonna focus on, I don't know, an extra measure of what you're gonna do for Shabbos. Maybe buy a special food for that month for Shabbos. Every month, I mean every week of that month. You're going to buy something special, or you're going to go on the internet and you're going to find a Dvar Torah if you haven't been doing that yet. Every Friday night meal, you're going to have a Dvar Torah prepared. Whatever it is, the idea is like Beit Hillel that I start at whatever level at one, but I increase to two, three, four, five, and onwards. That's why in this world, this is one message of what it is that we're trying to accomplish when we light our menorahs like Beit Hillel. Okay? You with me? Okay. This is part A, but there's a part B to this. What time is it? Okay, we're good. Okay, there's a part B. It's along the same lines about where Beit Shammai is all about decreasing and Beit Hillel is all about increasing. How should we, again, going back to the analogy, of the 70 bulls that we brought corresponding to the 70 nations, how do we dispel the darkness in the world? You're right. We know that the world is dark. The whole concept, the beauty of the holiday of Hanukkah is illuminating the darkness. On its most simplistic level, that is what this beautiful holiday is about. Where do we light the menorah? Where do we light it? In our window. We want, and when do we light it? Not by day. Specifically at night when it's dark. When it's dark, we want to show light illuminating the world. There's two ways to do that. One is you fight it, right? You strengthen your resistance against the negative corrupting influences that do bring darkness to this world. You can fight it. That's one way to do it. It's a valid approach. It's extremely hard, it's extremely difficult. And we have successes and a lot of failures, right? But the idea of Beit Shammai's perspective is that I'm trying to decrease the influences. I'm going to decrease the darkness. Beit Hillel, like we said before, he has a different perspective. Chanukah is the return of the temple, the return of lighting the menorah. I don't remember if I mentioned it to you. One of the most interesting architectural aspects of the temple building, a lot of different aspects of it, but one in particular, the windows in your home. Did I tell you this? Windows in your home are designed to take the light from the outside, the sunlight, and what's the word I'm looking for? Focus it. Better word.
Illuminate it, let it in.
To let it in, but it like almost harnessing the light from the outside, purposely pushing it inward.
It's
The
a
sun,
disbursement.
what's the word?
Disperse.
That's it. To take it and disperse it inward. The temple building had windows that were designed in the exact opposite perspective. Their windows were designed so that the light of the menorah should shine outward. It's not just a cool idea, it's a conceptual, it's ideological. Whereas when we have a door on our homes, or we have curtains, or shades, or blinds, why do we have those things? It's because we recognize that I don't want always everything from the outside coming in. I have a door on my house. Why? So that I can say, you can come in and you cannot. My grandmother used to say when we used to come, right? Wipe that schmutz, right? Don't bring that schmutz into my house, right? I don't think she was talking about the mud on my shoes. But I think conceptually, it's a great idea. Not everything out there in the society should come into my house. There is schmutz out there. There is garbage I don't want in my house. Not just the mud on the shoes. So what is it? Beit Shammai says our role, our mission in life is to start out here and slowly decrease that negativity. The 70 bulls start at 13, 12, 11, 10, 9, 8, 7. You have to somehow fight this and diminish the negativity and to break down the darkness. Don't give in. Fight the Yetzirah. Keep fighting. Keep fighting. Don't let the darkness get you. Beis Hillel says, while there's truth to that, there's another way to do it. You want to get rid of darkness? Make it brighter. Get more light. The way to get rid of darkness is not only by trying to fight it, but also by dispelling it. Get rid of it. Bring more light into the world, there will automatically be less darkness. Therefore, Hillel says, start here and increase. Keep growing it. Get more light. Start with one candlelight until you have a flame, eight flames burning bright on the last night of Hanukkah. That's how we can address this. We need to do this in the world in which we live because we need within ourselves. See, I say this all the time. I can't change the world until I start changing myself. It's not going to work. I have to be the one to do that. So if there's darkness in my life, as there is, I don't know anybody who doesn't have darkness in their life. It's not possible. Everybody has it. The question is, how do you address it? You can keep fighting it, and it's a way to do it, and you do have to fight. But there's another way, and Beit Hillel tells us what you do is you create such a tremendous light that the darkness fades away. Keep doing another mitzvah and another mitzvah because that is increasing the light within yourself, increasing the light within your family. And by definition, if your home burns brighter and my home burns brighter and the third guy's home burns brighter, guess what? There's less darkness in the world. The holiday of Hanukkah is all about these concepts of where there is this darkness and what we celebrate is the rededication. The Greeks did not destroy the temple. They defiled it. They brought the darkness of the outside society and brought it right into the temple itself. Tried to put out our light. We say no. The Hasmoneans, the Hasmoneans, they fought this battle against the Greeks, both physically, militarily. And then ultimately, the bigger one, the one that we celebrate, we don't celebrate the military victory. What do we do for that? That's not the part we celebrate, even though it was a tremendous miracle. A small handful of these ragtag fighters. Sounds like, what was the name of that show when I watched as a kid? Battlestar Galactica, a ragtag group of whatever. I don't know. Why these still in my head, I don't know. But it is. Right? But that's what it was. The Hashmonaim were just a bunch of guys, weren't soldiers per se. And yet, what do we do to celebrate their military victory? We celebrate it by saying Hallel. We make mention of it in the special prayer of Al Anisim, but as far as acting on it, performance and observance, it's all about the miracle of the oil. Why? Because the oil in the menorah represents the burning bright of positivity, the light of Torah, the light of values. That's what we focus on. We take the Hillel approach. We're going to increase the illumination to get rid of and cause the darkness to fade away. The more we continue to embody these principles of bringing more and more light, more and more morality to the world, by definition, the darkness will continue to fall apart. And that's really our responsibility, to increase our Torah knowledge, increase our connection to our Judaism, and illuminate this darkness that is all over the world. There is no place that doesn't have this. We all have it. And if we increase this learning, we increase our holiness, and we take it up a step each time we can, then we will literally fulfill the promise of the prophet that says that the job, the mission statement of the Jewish people is to be, fill in the blank, folks, a blank among the nations.
A light.
A light. Why that analogy? A light unto the nations? Because that's what it is. There's darkness out there. Our mission statement as a people is to be that light. And Hanukkah, of all the holidays, is the one that I think really epitomizes the most this concept of illuminating the world with this. These are two thoughts. I'll, whatever, it's late. What are your, let me hear some of your thoughts on this.
So going back to the first one, Daf Yomi is pretty, it's,
Intense.
and challenging. I've also heard about people that try to read through the Mishnayim.
Excellent. Yes, there's a thing called Mishnah Yomi. You learn, I think it's two Mishnayot a day. And I think they finish in 3 years, three something. Yeah, a Mishnah. There's now, I know Art Scroll has put out, there's something called Kitzer Shulchan Aruch, the abridged, code of Jewish law. That you study that, I think it's whatever, three, four, five different laws a day. And it comes in a little pocket thing. You finish it in a year. It's that routine, whatever it is. Whether it's Mishnah, Halacha, Gemara, you're right. Daf Yomi, I can't do it. I don't have that discipline to do. I'll miss 3, 4 days and I'm like, forget it. I'm way behind already. But yeah, you're right. Jim, you're 100% right. I should use that more. Mishnah Yomi is doable. It's absolutely doable. And there's English texts. You don't have to be breaking your head over the Hebrew or the Aramaic. It's translated beautifully. If you go to artscroll.com, they have all these different ones. They have, you're right, there's Mishnah, there's Halacha, there's Gemara, there's, okay, I'm not ready for Yerushalmi yet. Talmud Yerushalmi, that's already way above my pay grade, right? But that's the idea. You're right, 100%. Great point. But even like, how many Aliyos do we have on Shabbos? How many? How many people do we call up to the Torah typically?
Seven.
Seven.
Seven. How many days of the week are there?
Seven. Seven.
So if we set a goal that before we go to sleep or first thing in the morning when we get up, we read that Aliyah of the day. What is it? 10? 20 verses? Well, it's not crazy difficult. It's okay. So by the time Shabbos rolls around, you've read the parsha. And then when they read it in shul, you're basically reading it for the second time. Now you're thinking questions. Now you have, oh, I had this insight. Maybe I can ask the rabbi. Okay. Instead of just waking up Shabbos morning and maybe catching it. There's a million goals we can set for ourselves. But what I think I want to impress is that we can't just, okay, I'm going to cover, grow, got to do the Beit Hillel, cover breadth, got to cover ground. We have a lot to study. What were you going to say? Someone else I thought had their hand up. No? Okay. All right. So then next week we're going to do a different aspect in terms of Hanukkah, but whatever. This is like setting the stage of what the holiday itself is. Next week we'll take a different insight. All right.
Okay.
All right. Perfect. Have a
Zagazag.
wonderful, wonderful
Thank
week.
you. Yashkar.
Thank you, Rabbi.
My
Thank
pleasure. And
you. Yashkar.
I'll see you. Thank you. I'll see you guys next Sunday. We're on for next Sunday.
Right.
All
Thank
right.
you.
Perfect. All right. Take care, guys.
Enjoyed it. Thank
Thank
you.
you. My pleasure.
Yeah.